now, WyndhamVacationRentals.com has a sweepstakes going on where you can actually win $2,500 towards a vacation rental. It's called Our Home is Your Home. And what you do is you take your favorite family photo or video and you're going to post it on Instagram at hashtag WVROurHome. And you just simply tell them why your family makes a house a home and you're entered for a chance to win.
All right. Love that. All right, Kelly, where do we go for more info?
You can go to BetterStuffForLife.com to find out about, you know, all these tips and more.
Excellent. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.
The man behind the Tesla electric car wants to work with Puerto Rican officials to increase the energy grid around the country. Here's Chris Barnes.
The CEO of Tesla says the solar power unit of his electric car company could offer a long-term solution to Puerto Rico's crisis, as most of the island's been without electricity since Hurricane Maria. On Thursday, Musk was tweeting that Tesla has provided solar power for many smaller islands around the world, but that it could be done for Puerto Rico as well. The governor of Puerto Rico responding quickly, saying, "Let's talk. I'm Chris Barnes."
Uber has announced they're working to remove a software code that could allow the ride-hailing app to record a user's iPhone screen. Uber says the code isn't connected to anything in the company's code base, meaning it isn't doing anything. Uber says the code was provided by Apple to improve function between the Uber app and the Apple Watch. Uber said yesterday it's working with Apple to remove it completely as soon as possible. You're listening to USA Radio News.
When you're hiring, you want qualified candidates fast, and it can be hard to know where to find them. More than 3 million businesses use Indeed.com, the world's number one job site. Whether you need entry-level or highly skilled employees, Indeed helps you find great talent and make the right hire. Indeed is offering new users a $50 credit to give their first job post premium visibility as a sponsored job. Redeem this offer at Indeed.com/promo. That's Indeed.com/promo. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Former Major League Baseball player Daryl Strawberry, who struggled with drugs throughout his career, now working to help stop opioid abuse.
Well, the former Mets and Yankees star says he struggled greatly with substance abuse during his stellar career. Daryl Strawberry's mission now, to help cure and prevent addiction by going around the nation telling his story.
I think the message of faith has been lost in the homes. And we got to get back to bringing faith, because faith is where the real hope is.
That's what helped save his life, he says. Strawberry urging parents to educate their children about the dangers of drugs and give their kids Tylenol for pain.
Now all of a sudden, you know, the prescription medications come in and the opiates. Once it alters a kid's mind at 15 years old, 14, 15 years old, they're done.
A man who opened fire on a daycare in California could be facing the rest of his life in prison. Here's Jason Campidonia.
Gustavo Sepulveda pleaded not guilty in court Thursday while dressed in a blue jumpsuit and sitting in a wheelchair. Officials say Sepulveda used a semi-automatic firearm when he shot at his ex-girlfriend's home, which doubles as a daycare. Sepulveda made his way into the home, and around 10 kids were hiding in the bathroom with a daycare employee. Cops showed up shortly after, and Sepulveda was arrested. He's being held on $5 million bail, and he has a long criminal record.
AOL's Yellow Running Man is heading into retirement. The company announced today AOL Instant Messenger will be discontinued on December 15th after 20 years of chat history online. The long-running instant messaging service was one of many people's first social experiences on the Internet. This is USA Radio News.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Some fascinating interviews this week, ladies and gentlemen, including Democracy in Chains. How did our democracy get in chains, after all? And who has the key? That's what I want to know. But first, some strange news of the week. The border protection services of this government are doing a fantastic job protecting us from illegal crossings. That's right. But in this case, it's illegal crossings of Barbies. A shipment of counterfeit Barbie dolls in a rail container from Canada was intercepted at a Minnesota border crossing. U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials said a rail container at the International Falls Port of Entry was discovered containing 3,004 toys that initially, I guess they had to count those all, that initially appeared to be Barbie dolls manufactured by Mattel. Not so. And so they're on their way back to Canada. Take that, Canucks. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. President Dwight Eisenhower served during the 1950s and during a very turbulent time politically in our country, certainly as regards the question of communism and how we were going to deal with that, especially internally, at the same time as Joseph McCarthy served in the United States Senate, the notorious communist hunter. And he's often viewed as someone who kind of let it play out and didn't get involved, deeply in what was going on, as many were falsely accused of being communists and had their careers ruined. Someone who's written a book about this is David A. Nichols. He is the author of Ike and McCarthy. Mr. Nichols, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Good to be with you, Derek.
So just to begin with, to get this on the record, are you now or have you ever been a historian?
Yeah. I think I am now,
okay,
for sure.
Good.
As
long as we have that on the record from the beginning.
In the spirit of Joe McCarthy, that's a great line.
So have we, I mean, set this up for us a little bit, if you could, because many people who are into history, they remember what the McCarthy era was like, but set the scene, if you will. What was the atmosphere like, and how did Joe McCarthy make his name?
Well, Derek, they had fake news in those days too, and Joe McCarthy was one that generated a lot of it. And you know, the famous one that got him going was on February 9th, 1950. He gave his speech in West Virginia, where he claimed to have the names of 205 communists in the State Department. You know, Joe didn't have those names, and he also accused General George Marshall, Ike's former boss and mentor, of treason. But anyway, you know, he just had a floating entourage of reporters and everybody following around, seeing who he'd accuse of something next. And so he became, by the time Eisenhower came to office, was quite famous as a communist hunter. When Eisenhower became president, they got a one vote majority for the Republicans in the Senate. And they made Joe the chair of the Government Operations Committee, which had a permanent investigative subcommittee. And so he would take that subcommittee and go and do one senator hearings all over the country, and always quizzing people, saying, well, have you been a communist? He thought if somebody claimed the Fifth Amendment, they were automatically a communist. So he would go after a lot of people, and there were probably communist spies in the government. Not probably. It's been proven there were. Right. But there's no evidence that Joe McCarthy ever caught one. Right. And they would wash anybody out as any questionable. One of the things that's difficult for us modern people to understand is a terribly homophobic period. So just the rumor that you were gay could cost you your job. Not the fact, just the rumor. Right. And so that was part of this atmosphere. You know, every generation, we Americans get scared. And in those days, it was about communism, and now it's about terrorism. But right. And when we get scared, we do some bad things.
And we're speaking with David Nichols. He is the author of Ike and McCarthy. There was a lot of response within the Senate to McCarthy's tactics. What was Ike's approach? They were members of the same party. What was his approach publicly, and what was his approach privately?
Well, the big critique of Ike for decades has been that he didn't speak out against McCarthy. You know, we tend to believe in our professions, both journalism and history, that somehow the bully pulpit is what's important. Well, there are things beyond the bully pulpit that aren't always advertised. Ike, in fact, would not even mention McCarthy's name in public. He believed that giving him presidential attention would just enhance his reputation.
If it had been available, then he probably would not have tweeted at the senator, for example.
No, that would I'm confident that would not be Ike's style. Right. I don't. You know, if anything, he was a little too secretive sometime. You know, this is the general who fooled the German general staff about when and where the greatest military armada in human history would land in France in 1944.
Right.
You know, deception was in his bones.
Right.
But by 1954, he had concluded that McCarthy had become a threat to the country's stability, to his party, to his program, and he went after him. Dwight Eisenhower destroyed Joe McCarthy with a clandestine behind-the-scenes operation that resulted in the Army-McCarthy hearings that really destroyed McCarthy's reputation. Those hearings went on for 2 months during 1954, and they were about the privileges sought for Private G. David Shine, who had been on McCarthy's staff and who really was McCarthy's chief counsel's Roy Cohn's lover. And what the Eisenhower administration did was wrap this gay lover scandal around the neck of a prestigious United States senator in the president's own party in a congressional election year. And that's about as thorny as it gets in Washington, D.C. It's a remarkable operation of deception, but they engineered a report on these privileges sought for Private Shine. You know, Cohn kept wanting Shine to get a special commission so he could stay with him, and he'd agitate with the Army to get him weekends and nights off so they could go do what they called committee business at a nearby hotel. And so, you know, people didn't speak openly about the homosexual scandal connected with this, but that was in the backdrop, certainly, and Roy Cohn later, by the way, is kind of interesting. After this all blew over, Cohn went back to New York to do his law practice and became the lawyer and mentor to one Donald Trump for about 13 years. But that's another story. That's not in my book.
It wouldn't be history if it didn't have strange and tenuous connections to the present day.
And the hearings, you know, were televised. There were only about three main networks in the country at the time. So people watched these hearings hour after hour, day after day, month after month. And the television camera was not kind to Joe McCarthy, who was a raving drunk, among other things, and looked bad on television.
Right.
The Eisenhower White House, engineered through Fred Seaton, who was Assistant Secretary of Defense at Ike's request, a report on the privileges sought for G. David Shine, and that was published on March 11th, 1954, and it caused a firestorm of controversy, and 5 days later, the McCarthy Committee decided to hold hearings, televised hearings, and those hearings just destroyed Joe McCarthy's reputation, and it's a masterpiece of deception how they carried it off, although it may have cost them the election. The Democrats did win in November.
Well, a fascinating, only recently revealed story that was a part of a larger history that most of us are familiar with. But thank you for telling it. David Nichols, he's the author of Ike and McCarthy. Please check it out. It's a bit of hidden history that you should know about. David, thank you for being with us today on Now It's the News.
Thank you, Derek.
Thanks. All the best.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com. I'm Will Flitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
This is a special alert to consumers who owe back taxes to the IRS.
Due to the financial hardship consumers are facing during the decline in the U.S. economy, the Internal Revenue Service has made it easier to settle tax problems. An open phone line has been established by National Tax Relief. Grab a pen or put this number in your cell phone, but call 1-800-210-0311 today. That's 1-800-210-0311. When you call, you'll get information and see if you qualify. If you owe back taxes to the IRS and can't afford to pay them back, there's no need to fear anymore. You may qualify for a program that could settle your tax problems and save you money. For free information and to see if you qualify, call National Tax Relief today at 1-800-210-0311. That's 1-800-210-0311. 1-800-210-0311.
Mike Hewitt here with another minute of common sense. Fear of the changing times seems compelling, but let's pause for a little reflection. A friend's mother traveled west aboard a covered wagon and flew home on a jet plane. Imagine her view of change. And what of the roaring 20s, a decade that witnessed rampant hedonism, wild drug use, piercings and tattoos galore, near mainstream pornography, the rise of hardline American communism, and much more. It was America's romp on the wild side, a social rejection of Victorianism. Sound familiar? I bet. But it's more than noteworthy to remember that these young folks of the 20s were the parents of what we now know of as America's greatest generation. Louis lament on how times have changed. Folks, times always change. But know this, the American dream is still alive for anyone willing to embrace it. For more common sense, visit themikehewittshow.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Today we're speaking with Tim Harford. He is an award-winning journalist, economist, and broadcaster. He is the author of 50 Inventions That Shaped the Modern Economy. Tim, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
So I am fascinated by the fact that the Billy bookcase from IKEA may have played a role in making sure that that I have a job and that the world did not devolve into financial collapse. How, indeed, is that the case?
Well, what I was trying to do with these 50 inventions was not necessarily pick the 50 most important, but pick 50 that taught us a lesson, or maybe had a little surprise or a story behind them. And in the case of the Billy bookcase, the lesson is don't overlook everyday marginal incremental innovation. What the Billy bookcase is built on effectively is just shaving off a little bit of cost here, a little bit of cost there. Is there a slightly cheaper way to make it? Is there a slightly more efficient way to pack it? Because a lot of it's to do with the logistics of shipping this thing around. And just steadily over the years, over the decades of making this product, it's been going since the 1970s, just getting it to be a little bit cheaper and the same quality. The Billy bookcase represents a kind of innovation that has transformed our lives, has made a real impact because it's made so many more products affordable. Because this sort of attention to detail and to logistics, it's boring, it's technical stuff, but it really does change our lives. So the Billy bookcase stands in for all of those unsung inventions.
So this would really be an example of, at least within the world of our economy, evolutionary change as opposed to revolutionary change.
Absolutely. Now, of course, there are revolutionary changes, for sure. I mean, one of them, I would say, goes all the way back to the 5,000-6,000 years ago when humans invented the plow, and suddenly we moved from a hunter-gatherer society to an agricultural society. That changes everything. That creates civilization. It creates all the cities. It creates culture, but it also creates all kinds of things like armies, extortion, taxes, bureaucrats. So it all comes with the plow. So, I mean, some of these innovations changed a lot, and some of them are a lot more modest.
We're speaking with Tim Harford. He's the author of 50 Inventions That Shaped the Modern Economy. Given what you studied here in terms of these different innovations, and given how far we are in history, given that we've already seen the smartphone now 10 years ago, do you get any better sense of what you think the next plow might be? Obviously, there are all sorts of tweaks that you can make on the technology that we have, but did you get a better sense of perhaps anyone who's working towards the next big economic seismic shift?
Well, you don't get plows very often. That one's a few thousand years ago. You could name a few others. Maybe the steam engine might be another one of similar impact, and maybe the invention of fire itself. But they don't come along often. I think the lesson that I learned looking back is, well, of course, forecasting is impossible because these things always catch people by surprise, and it's always the unintended consequences. There was the ripple effects. But what I've learned looking back is it is often the simple, cheap stuff that we overrate, we underrate, and that becomes ubiquitous. So everybody, for instance, wanted me to talk about the Gutenberg printing press. And, of course, that's an incredibly important, sophisticated invention. Gave us mass literacy, textbooks, newspapers, novels, everything, hugely important. But nobody said, you should write about paper. But, of course, without paper, there's no Gutenberg press. And paper, of course, is not just a writing surface, but we use it for Kleenex, wiping up all kinds of things. There's a roll of paper by your lavatory. There's wallpaper. There's sandpaper. Cardboard boxes all made of paper. So it's a ubiquitous product, just as important, I would say, as the Gutenberg press, but completely overlooked. So my advice when looking in the future is look for the stuff that's cheap. Cheap and effective, because cheap makes a difference. I am an economist, after all.
I guess in a way our minds are attracted to those shiny objects, and the Gutenberg Bible is one of them. But if you think about it, once you invent a printing press, you have to invent a way of rapidly and inexpensively producing the paper that's going to serve that printing press. And how does that get done? And I guess that seems to be more the focus of what you're talking about here, things that fly under the radar that don't necessarily attract our eye as much.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the iPhone is in the book as well, but I'm trying to tell an untold story about the iPhone too. So the lesson here comes from an economist called Mariana Mazzucato, who wanted to make the point that we often trumpet private sector invention, private sector entrepreneurialism. And that's very important, and that's a story behind a lot of the inventions in the book, but not all of them. And the iPhone, we celebrate Steve Jobs, of course, but if you look under the skin of the iPhone, you see a lot of inventions that came from the government, usually the American government, and often the American military. So GPS, the internet itself, the algorithms that transform the analog sound waves into digital signals. The touchscreen is a British invention, comes from the Royal Radar Establishment. There's some fine breeding for you. And, you know, we don't think of it as an invention that was produced by government, but the iPhone itself, of course, produced by Steve Jobs and Apple, but all the building blocks, they're government. So there's often a story under the skin.
If you think about it, there are certain ramifications that those can have that maybe aren't easily publicly processed that could lead to very interesting things. I mean, maybe it's possible that the iconic $300 hammer that the Pentagon buys could produce something down the line that could completely revolutionize the way we do business. And we don't necessarily know what those are.
Absolutely. Yeah, and there's a great example in the book, which is mathematicians playing around with prime numbers a couple of hundred years ago, because prime numbers are pretty things if you're a mathematician. They're interesting. They're hard to understand. They make strange patterns. A prime number, as you probably will remember from high school, is a number like 13 that can't be divided by any other number. You know, 12 can be divided by 6 and 4 and 3 and 2, but 13 can't be divided by any number. Right. So mathematicians looking at prime numbers make these discoveries. 200 years later, cryptographers realize you can use this to make a kind of code that we can use to encode our credit cards or our confidential communications on the internet. So we would not have e-commerce. We would not be able to hand over our credit card details to Amazon or to Apple without 200 years ago these mathematicians noodling around aimlessly with prime numbers. So it is hard to tell where an invention starts and where it's going to go.
So I think the lesson I've learned today, Tim Harford, is let scientists goof off. Sometimes it produces amazing results, and some of them are evident here in your book, 50 Inventions That Shaped the Modern Economy. Tim Harford, thank you so much for being on Now It's the News with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
All the best.
I'm Will Flitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. The rules of business are changing, and women entrepreneurs are at the forefront of the transformation. According to the 2017 Bank of America Women Business Owner Spotlight, more than two-thirds of female entrepreneurs believe women will match or exceed men in holding C-suite or executive roles. Furthermore, a majority of women entrepreneurs believe women will achieve pay equality with men over the next two decades and anticipate that paid maternity leave policies will expand into at least 25 states. Sharon Miller, Head of Small Business, Bank of America.
As I meet with women entrepreneurs across the country, I'm constantly struck by their unwavering resilience and optimism. These women are working for a brighter future, one that includes equal pay, work-life balance, and greater support for their families. Their insights about equality in the workplace bode incredibly well for the entire small business community.
For more, visit newsroom.bankofamerica.com.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
All of America is praying for the wounded and the grieving, and we will be with them today, and we will be with them forever.
President Trump speaking today about the violence in Las Vegas and those who are recovering from the massive gun attack. The president also addressed Puerto Rico and said they will not be abandoning the victims of Hurricane Maria.
We will not rest until that job is done. Puerto Rico has a long road of recovery ahead, very long road.
The man for whom President Obama freed five Islamic terrorists, admitting he abandoned his post. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl expected to plead guilty to charges of desertion and misbehavior before the enemy. Bergdahl's facing life in prison. Pleading guilty puts his fate in the hands of a judge rather than the hand of a jury. The men who were injured trying to find Bergdahl are expected to testify in front of the judge. USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn Root, otherwise known as War. You hear my national radio show, War Now, the Wayne Allyn Root Show, every day on USA Radio Network at 6 p.m. Eastern, as well as my national TV show, War Now, on Newsmax TV every day at 8 p.m. Eastern time. But I'm everywhere leading the conservative fight on Fox News, on hundreds of radio shows as a guest, writing books like Angry White Male, my newspaper columns, even on CNN. I'm a conservative warrior fighting for conservatism, capitalism, American exceptionalism, and Judeo-Christian values. And of course, I will always be the fiercest defender in the media for my great President Donald J. Trump. But it all starts at my website, RootForAmerica.com. You'll find the hottest stories, news headlines, my passionate, in-your-face, take-no-prisoners conservative commentaries, and popular videos. The left will win this war over my cold, dead body. So every day, start your day with the news and opinions that matter to conservatives and patriots at my site, RootForAmerica.com, or listen to my radio show at USAradio.com, or watch my TV show at NewsmaxTV.com. Above all, be sure to root for America.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. We're speaking today with singer and songwriter Loudon Wainwright III. He is the author of liner notes on parents, children, exes and excess, death and decay, and a few of my other favorite things. Loudon, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
It's good to be with you, Derek.
Seems like you have quite a few favorite things. You have what I would describe as a complicated life. Tell us how you grew up and sort of developed into that.
Well, I grew up in a suburb of New York City, an affluent suburb, a town called Bedford, mm-hmm. New York. My parents had met each other in the Marine Corps.
Really?
Kind of 1945-ish, and my dad was a journalist. He wrote for Life magazine. He had a column in the magazine called The View from Here. And I went away to boarding school when I was a teenager, and then acting school. That's what I thought I was going to be an actor. And then I got into music and started to write songs about 1968, and have been doing that for almost 50 years. I guess it's 50 years next year, and running around with my guitar, playing shows and making records and having kids. I've got four kids. I write about that in the book and their mothers, four kids and three moms, and ups and downs and thrills and spills. That's kind of what the book is.
Now you have a bunch of musical folks in your family. Like three of your kids are singers and musicians, and your former wife was as well. Like, where does all that musicality come from? Is that something that you inherited from your parents? You just kind of absorbed from folks that you met around you? Where does that come from? Because that's an awful high percentage of folks in one family.
Well, I married Kate McGarrigle about 1971, and we had two kids, Rufus and Martha Wainwright, and Kate, of course, was a great musician. So and then I had a daughter with Suzzy Roach from the Roaches. So in both of those cases, the deck was kind of genetically stacked, I guess you could say. My dad wasn't a musician, but he loved music. He had a terrific record collection, and I think I write in the book about how that his record collection had a big effect on me in terms of my decision or my desire to be a musician and a guitar player and things.
I hear the part of that collection was Stan Freberg and Tom Lehrer. How did that impact? I actually
Stan Freberg, Tom Lehrer, you know, Shelley Berman, Jonathan Winters, comedy records. I loved comedy records and I think that's reflected in my show, which I do, you know, this funny songs, in addition to, you know, serious songs. But comedy has always been a big part of my job. You know, probably the most famous song of mine that I've recorded was my novelty song, Dead Skunk. You know, then I wrote songs like I Wish I Was a Lesbian and, you know, all kinds of silly stuff. Again, as we say, intermingled with more serious stuff. But I think if you can make people laugh, I mean, that's such a great release of psychic tension. And I certainly enjoy doing it when I can in my shows.
Life is like that. I mean, you're crying in 1 minute and laughing in the next, and life doesn't tend to make too many distinctions between where you happen to be at that point. It just kind of takes you one way or another. We're speaking with Loudon Wainwright III. And how did you? I mean, obviously you come by that name honestly because you had a father and a grandfather with those names. That was a choice to go with that once you decided to become someone who recorded records. Why did you decide to keep that heritage in your name?
Well, because it's my name. I mean, there was some discussion. Loudon is a strange. There aren't many people with that as their first name. But it is a family name. My grandfather had it. I think it might be Scottish or something like that. But when my first record was about to come out in 1970 on Atlantic Records, the question is, was I going to use the big question was I going to use the Roman numeral 3, which is kind of pretentious and preppy like and everything else. But my father was famous and he had the name Loudon, so we decided that I would use it, or he convinced me to use it, so there would be less confusion about which Loudon we were talking about.
Right.
And that's kind of that was my decision to use the Roman numeral 3.
Right. Yeah, you know, as a marketing decision, it kind of makes you stand out too. You know, I mean, you immediately question, well, what happened to the first and the second one, and you look for their albums too at the same time, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, there still was confusion. I mean, people used to come up and say to me, boy, I loved your wonderful columns that you wrote in Life magazine. And then I would say, well, thank you very much.
Right. No, and I will tell you from time to time, and I've known such people, in radio, for instance, folks will sometimes change their names from what they actually are to what they are on the air. So I laud you for having kept with family tradition in that regard, and I think it served you well. We're speaking with Loudon Wainwright III. He's the author of Liner Notes. Obviously, you've led a very complicated life in terms of your relationships with your partners and your children. In that sense, is music, you know, kind of in a big sense, therapy for you?
I don't think it is therapy for me. I mean, it's an interesting topic, you know, the family life, when it works well and when it works in a kind of dysfunctional way, and I've certainly written about all of that, but it doesn't solve any of the problems. I mean, I think it's therapeutic possibly for my audience. I like that idea anyway, that if I'm singing about, you know, a tough Thanksgiving dinner with the family. I do actually have a song called Thanksgiving about that. You know, that the listener is remembering their own awful Thanksgivings, and that brings up feelings which. So actually, I'm kind of a therapist. I think I should be getting paid a lot more money.
A musical therapist. So coming into the fall season, what is your Thanksgiving looking like?
Well, you know, I have there's one big family. You know, I mentioned Rufus and Martha, Kate and my kids, and then Lucy and her mom, Suzy, and then I have a fourth kid. Lexi Kelly, Alexandra Kelly, we all get together at various times in clumps or the whole outfit, and we throw something together and put the turkey on and try not to drink too much wine.
Well, it sounds like a fun family gathering, and I'm sure it will be a very musical and high energy one. So, Loudon Wainwright III, he's the author of Liner Notes. I won't go into the subtitle because it'll take for the rest of the interview.
But it's a tongue twister.
It's a tongue twister, but I think it pretty well. Let me give it one more stab here because I think it accurately encapsulates what you do. Liner Notes on parents and children. Exes and excess, death and decay, and a few of my other favorite things. Loudon Wainwright III, thank you so much for being with us on Now It's the News.
All right, Derek, good talking to you.
All the best. Bye-bye.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
This report is brought to you by Welltower. People are living longer than ever. The number of 80-year-old Americans will more than double in the next 20 years. And according to a survey commissioned by Welltower, a leader in healthcare real estate, seniors want to age in big cities. Thomas DeRosa, CEO of Welltower.
The 2017 Aging in Cities survey challenges preconceived ideas and shows that contemporary city dwellers plan to stay put as they age. They want all the amenities that big cities offer, including access to good health care, transportation, cultural experiences, and places to gather with family and friends.
The survey of 3,000 adults in 10 big cities underscores the growing preference toward urban living. It suggests that, in the future, more seniors will choose big cities over traditional suburban retirement communities. 8 out of 10 city dwellers want to make new friends at age 80-plus and believe cities are the best place for relationships. Their top concern is loss of mobility and access to city life. For more information, visit Welltower.com.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime. And selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. We're speaking today with Nancy McLean. She's the author of Democracy in Chains. We know that democracy has been kind of limping along recently, but it's got a few additional burdens that that you perhaps didn't know about before, and some interesting historical background about this. And Nancy, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, Donald Trump may have been the first billionaire to be elected president, but he's certainly far from the first billionaire to have had a decisive influence on national policy, correct?
That's absolutely true.
Yeah. So tell us about that. How? I mean, this isn't just a product of very wealthy people getting together and deciding they want to take over the government. I mean, we've had very wealthy people around for a long time, for the entire history of our country, and for long before that. How did this get started? This was a product of one particular individual, one particular intellectual, the movement that you're talking about at any rate.
Yeah, so what I discovered in my research is that there's a particular thinker behind what the Koch brothers and their huge donor network is doing to our politics, and that thinker's name is James McGill Buchanan. He was the only U.S. Southerner to win the Nobel Prize when he won it in 1986. He spent most of his life in Virginia institutions, including in Charlottesville, lately much in the news, and he basically over the years came up with the ideas that have informed a strategy to take down the liberal state and to transform government as we have known it actually over the course of the 20th century. And Charles Koch became very interested in those ideas and began to invest in a particularly big way after 1997, and we are seeing the fruits of that now. Donald Trump would not be in the White House but for the ideas spread by this network and for the organizing done by the Koch brothers donor network and the literally hundreds of organizations they fund, if you include the state level and the international level. So it's a quite audacious plan. I was stunned to find it in my research.
We're speaking with Nancy McLean. She's the author of Democracy in Chains. James McGill Buchanan was an economist. What were his ideas, and how were they put together into a plan by these wealthy people, and what was that plan designed to do?
Yes. Well, I think of Buchanan and Milton Friedman, whose name is probably more familiar to your listeners, as kind of the yin and yang of this project to produce a kind of free-reign capitalism. And they were both part of the same networks going back to the late 1940s, but where Friedman was kind of the bright side of the project and was this genial, funny, warm, charming guy who was always making the case for what markets could do if they were freed from government influence and people were, in his words, free to choose. Buchanan was a much darker, more shadowy figure who was really concerned to make a case against government and against the very notion of the public interest or the common good. And so he developed a school of thought, often referred to as the Virginia School of Political Economy, that set out to prove government failure, to prove that elected and public officials were not who they said they were, just a very, very dark stuff. That ended up being extremely important to this libertarian movement that had always been marginal and doesn't represent many Americans in, you know, in terms of a proportion of the electorate. But because of this Koch donor money and these, you know, these billionaires that have gotten on board for a strategy informed by these ideas, they are transforming our society kind of shock and awe style over the last decade.
So what was the plan that was formulated on the basis of his ideas, and how has it been put into action?
Right. Well, the long-term plan, the kind of end game of all this, is actually to change our Constitution. Buchanan began arguing from the 1970s forward that we needed a constitutional revolution, and because he thought the Constitution didn't adequately protect the rights of the minority of the wealthy and, you could say, the right-wing wealthy, not all wealthy, and corporations who didn't agree with what Democratic majorities were doing. And he had a chance to try out those ideas in Chile under the Pinochet dictatorship in 1980, and he succeeded in putting in advising a constitution that put locks and bolts on what the people could do together in Chile in policy, and then brought that home. And so now the Koch donor network and their allied organizations, such as the American Legislative Exchange Council and a Republican Party, they have completely transformed through these donor contributions and the threat of primary challenges. They are pushing for a constitutional convention in America, and they have, by expert counts, there's a little bit of variation, but either 27 or 28 of the 34 states needed to call a constitutional convention. We haven't had one of those since 1787. This is extremely important, extremely radical. It's not getting nearly enough attention in the news. And if they get that constitutional convention, they will transform our politics. But in the meantime, to get to that number, to get to that 34 number, they have been systematically taking over state governments and pushing through radical changes within those states, such as my own state of North Carolina, where they have instituted a radical gerrymander to grossly misrepresent the will of the electorate, you know, to buttress their own fortunes, and they have engaged in serious voter suppression using the myth of voter fraud that every research study shows is not a significant problem, but they're using that myth to keep people from voting in many places, and doing other kinds of radical changes from, you know, big cuts to public education at all levels, moving public monies from public schools to unregulated charter schools, just a whole slew of things, but that are basically designed to break down the power of the groups who supported the model of government that we had over the 20th century, where government could actually do things that citizens called on it to do, to break up the power to do that, and then to change the rules so as to overrepresent these minority kind of radical right extremist constituencies.
I mean, how can mm-hmm. folks across both sides of the aisle organize in order to oppose this and shift this in a different direction,
right?
Because the forces aligned against that are enormously powerful.
Right. Well, the first thing I would say is that I'm a historian, not a political strategist. So my contribution is really in helping people to understand how we got to the mess that we're in right now, and to understand the ideas that brought us here and how those ideas were transformed into an operational strategy to, you know, it sounds like I'm exaggerating, but if you read the book, you'll see that I'm not, to take down the model of citizen-driven government that we've had over the 20th century. So Charles Koch is a very messianic man. The collection of fellow donors he's assembled around him are equally messianic in what they're trying to impose on us. And so I think the first step is for people to inform themselves. And I think a second step is to realize that Charles Koch and his allied people and grantees are doing what they're doing in the full knowledge that if they tell the truth to the people about what they really seek and what their actual endgame is, people will recoil from that and oppose it. And that's been shown many times. That's why they're using this stealth strategy. So I think being informed and then taking a deep breath and realizing, okay, we're actually the majority and they are afraid of the majority knowing what they're up to, that is a huge source of potential strength. So I think when that, you know, latent majority is informed and is activated, then I am hopeful that we will be able to find a solution. But I have to tell you, as a historian, I believe that this is a kind of a fork in the road historical moment, like the 1860s and 1870s, you know, after the Civil War and during Reconstruction, like the 1930s and the Great Depression, and like the 1960s, the Civil Rights era, where the decisions we make or don't make now will reverberate for generations. So I really hope that your listeners will, you know, if they're not already paying attention to what's happening, really start paying attention, because this is just an absolutely crucial moment for the future that our children and grandchildren will inherit.
Well, let's hope that sunshine is the best disinfectant, and that knowledge truly is power, because we need to take some action to make sure that the power is in the hands of the people and not the powerful. And I think that applies regardless of your political perspective. This is about power, really, not where you are in terms of liberalism or conservatism. Nancy McLean,
exactly.
The author of Democracy in Chains, a fascinating read, an important one. Thank you for being with us today on Now It's the News.
Thank you so much, Derek.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Happy train.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair and Godric Rockland. For more information, go to Twitter, at Now It's the News. And until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then we suggest you call Page Publishing at 1-800-658-8202 immediately. That's 1-800-658-8202. Page Publishing is looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we will give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we'll get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything: editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or biography, and want to get it published, then you need to call Page Publishing and do it immediately. Call 1-800-658-8202 now for your free author submission kit. That's 1-800-658-8202. Again, for your free author submission kit, call 1-800-658-8202. That's 1-800-658-8202. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with a simple phone call. Call Page Publishing at 1-800-658-8202 for your free author submission kit.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
All of America is praying for the wounded and the grieving, and we will be with them today, and we will be with them forever.
President Trump speaking today about the violence in Las Vegas and those who are recovering from the massive gun attack. The president also addressed Puerto Rico and said they will not be abandoning the victims of Hurricane Maria.
We will not rest until that job is done. Puerto Rico has a long road of recovery ahead, very long road.
The man for whom President Obama freed five Islamic terrorists, admitting he abandoned his post. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl expected to plead guilty to charges of desertion.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
All of America is praying for the wounded and the grieving, and we will be with them today, and we will be with them forever.
President Trump speaking today about the violence in Las Vegas and those who are recovering from the massive gun attack. The president also addressed Puerto Rico and said they will not be abandoning the victims of Hurricane Maria.
We will not rest until that job is done. Puerto Rico has a long road of recovery ahead, very long road.
The man for whom President Obama freed five Islamic terrorists, admitting he abandoned his post. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl expected to plead guilty to charges of desertion and misbehavior before the enemy. Bergdahl's facing life in prison. Pleading guilty puts his fate in the hands of a judge rather than the hand of a jury. The men who were injured trying to find Bergdahl are expected to testify in front of the judge. USA Radio News.
From Struck Films.
Where did you come from?
The true story of a stray dog.
Who are you?
That's Pluto.
Who saves a struggling family in more ways than one.
What's wrong?
This isn't working anymore.
Sometimes help comes from the most unlikely places.
I don't need you.
He's trying. He really is.
Sometimes one dog can change everything.
You're awfully small, aren't we, boy?
From the director of The Other Side of Heaven, The Stray. Rated PG. For theater locations and more information, visit thestray.movie. In theaters now.
Getting your flu shot at Walgreens is easier than ever. Just walk right in, and there's no cost to you with a $0 copay with most insurance. Plus, when you get a flu shot, you help provide a life-saving vaccine to a child in need through the UN Foundation. Swing by your local Walgreens anytime to get a flu shot and help make a difference. Get a shot, give a shot. It's that easy. Walgreens, at the corner of happy and healthy.
Through August 31st, 2018, for every immunization given, Walgreens will donate 22 cents up to $2 million. Vaccine restrictions apply. Talk to your pharmacist to learn more.
A dip for the economy when it comes to jobs. Correspondent Chris Barnes takes a look.
The Labor Department reporting that the economy lost 33,000 jobs in September as those storms slammed hiring, and it's the first one-month job loss in 7 years, when analysts had been expecting an increase of about 90,000 jobs. More encouraging news coming from the unemployment side of the ledger as the nation's jobless rate fell to 4.2% in September, the lowest since 2001. I'm Chris Barnes.
Russia threatening to clamp down on U.S. media after American authorities started leaning on Kremlin broadcaster RT. The Justice Department has told RT it has until October 17th to register as a foreign agent. Congress is investigating RT's role in Russian interference in last year's election. Now several Russian government agencies are looking into declaring a number of U.S. media outlets undesirable. That would stop them from being able to work in Russia. USA Radio News.
When you're hiring, you want qualified candidates fast, and it can be hard to know where to find them. More than 3 million businesses use Indeed.com, the world's